welcome to the Cannabis Connection. I'm your host, Christopher Carr. Thank you for tuning in to Santa Cruz Cannabis Talk Radio. We're honored to have you with us. I've been looking forward to this show for many weeks. We have Blair. She is from Venice Beach, California, and went to Otis Art School. Becoming aware of the way textiles are produced, she became interested in agriculture, getting her start on the biodynamic farm on the island of Maui. This experience forever changed her life and solidified her down the path of agriculture. She then apprenticed on a biodynamic farm in Sacramento, Rafael Gardens, located at what was then Rudolf Steiner College. After this apprenticeship, she wanted to try farming on her own and landed in Covelo. Daniel is from Massachusetts, also started farming in Hawaii, landing a job on a lettuce farm on the Big Island. Returning to the mainland, he volunteered on a few different farms in Eugene, Oregon area before starting an apprenticeship at the Live Power Community Farm, a horse-powered biodynamic vegetable CSA located in Covelo. Their paths came together when they met at the farmer's market in Covelo, and from here, they embarked on an agricultural endeavor together, getting married and starting a family. With the help of Blair's parents, they now are responsible for 60 acres consisting of hay fields, a woodlot, and about 2 acres under cultivation of vegetables and cannabis production. In 2018, they won the Regenerative Farm Award at the Emerald Cup with 2 other farms. They are currently Sun and Earth and Dragonfly Earth Medicine certified. They had recently dropped their Demeter certification due to extensive paperwork and financial restraints, but still very much practice biodynamics. This year, they will be featured in a documentary featuring 2 other farms, Green Source Gardens and Bryceland Forest Farm. The film is a journey through a year in the life of these 3 family farms cultivating cannabis, food, and community in the pursuit of a regenerative future. Biodynamic is one key thing that I'm very excited to discuss. And the film, we had Jesse Dodd and Claire on last week, which was Tending the Garden. So it's a wonderful opportunity to kind of have this ongoing conversation and to get to know the farms better. So welcome to the Cannabis Connection, Radical Herbs. Oh, let me see here. One second. I'm going to let the engineer bring us on. Welcome to the show. Hello, are you there? So sorry, we had a little bit of a different flow this evening. Welcome to the show, are you there? Keep on going. Very excited to bring on Radical Herbs. We're just getting our levels dialed.
Just keep talking, bud.
Okay.
I'll fix it.
We got a little bit of technical difficulties. All good. We got you on the line. We see you here. And if for any callers have any questions regarding biodynamics and regenerative agriculture, we'd love to hear your feedback. So you can give us a call here. It's 831-479-1080. If you have questions throughout the interview, would love to facilitate you and continue this ongoing conversation. Very excited to start. Looks like it's on, right? One key thing is the teachings of Rudolf Steiner, which I'm very excited to hear, this spiritual connection of the cosmos and cannabis and the farm. Let's see here. Are you there, Blair? Thank you for your patience, folks. We're going to lock this in. So with Tending the Garden, we've had Bryslyn Forest Farm on the show. Green Source Gardens will be on the show next week. Blair, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I found you finally. Thank you so much for your patience. We had to pull in the reinforcements. The cavalry came, and we're all aligned now. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me.
And go ahead. Tell the people where you're joining us this evening.
I was just gonna say Daniel unfortunately cannot make it. We couldn't find somebody to watch the kids, so he's watching the kids. So there's not a bunch of crying and screaming in the background.
That's great. You got to divide and conquer sometimes.
Yeah. So I'm joining you from Round Valley up in Mendocino County, also a town known as Covelo. It's known by Round Valley here by the native tribes who originate this land. And it's a small little town, about 2,000 people, up in eastern Mendocino County, and it's a beautiful round valley surrounded by the Mendocino National Forest on one side, and we have an amazing rivers around here and streams and creeks, and we're fortunate to be down on the valley floor and have some really awesome agricultural land where we're farming here.
Just give thanks. Yes. No. And it's been, congratulations. You guys just had another baby, right? Your family's growing. And how has that been with this new chapter here?
Yeah, our family is four now. So that's definitely taken some adjusting and still adjusting of running a farm and a couple different, we're pretty diversified. So doing cannabis and vegetables and then also some value added products and, it's hay season, so I find that always just when life feels like it couldn't quite get any busier, hay season happens. So we're kind of, that's where we are right now with a 7-week-old and a 3-year-old. So we're hanging in there and making stuff work and dealing with all the challenges of that and joys of that and everything in between. So.
Excellent. And you had a farmer's market this morning. And so, well, let's just jump right into you both have this history of apprenticing and this connection in the Hawaiian Islands and then coming back and becoming more involved with biodynamic farming. And can you speak to the novice listener or even myself? I've learned quite a bit recently, and you guys are so articulate and in many ways wonderful ambassadors to this approach, these teachings of Rudolf Steiner. I was blessed to be exposed to Waldorf education. I went to public school, but my little brother was a student of Rudolf Steiner and went to Waldorf school growing up. And so we were blessed to kind of have some of that in my upbringing. But I would love to kind of shed light just from the ground floor or even like a 10,000 foot view of who is Rudolf Steiner and what is biodynamic agriculture?
Yeah, that's great that you, that's really awesome that you were exposed to that. I often find when I begin to describe biodynamics, I sometimes ask people if they've heard of Waldorf education because it kind of helps, like if they have, give some kind of relation to like who this person was who created it, because he really created a lot of really amazing things and really is not very well known at all, especially in the United States. And so, yeah, one of the things he created was a type of education, which is Waldorf education. He had influence on art, on architecture. There's medicine, anthroposophical medicine, and then also a type of performance art and so he touched on many things, and sort of it wasn't till the end of his life that there were people who were into his teachings who reached out to him because they started to see a degradation in their land once they started using chemical fertilizers and sort of industrial agriculture started to come around, and that was in the early 1900s. And so they kind of really begged him to look at agriculture and give some lectures and indications of what they could do. And that was sort of how biodynamic agriculture was born. And so Steiner really looked at the whole farm as a living organism and how to make that farm self-sustaining. And not only the farm as we see it in the land and how we're looking at that, but then also how the plants and the creatures are related to the cosmos, because he very much believed that that had a huge influence on the plants and the animals and the things that we do, because the plants are very much there, you know, they're rooted in the ground and they can't walk around and go inside and do things like we do. And so they're really exposed to, we see very clearly it's the influence of the sun. And often if you're paying really close attention, you can see the influence of the moon, like usually around the full moon, especially this time of year, the weeds will just go and the plants and everything have this huge growth spurt. And you can see that influence. But he also went beyond that at looking at the influence of the other celestial beings, the planets and the influence of the zodiac and those sorts of things. So he very much one of the things that he gave indications for and to do was also based on soil fertility and looking at, he gave a lot of pictures of how to look at the farm and the way things grow differently. Like he would say, you look at a plant as an example, the way you would see, like if it was a human, it would be like its organs, the head would be in the ground. You'd flip a human upside down and like the roots are the brain and the rest of the body is kind of out in the world. So kind of really looking at like how important it is for soil fertility and how everything the plant, a lot of what the plant is reading and taking in is all in the soil and how important soil fertility is. And so compost is really important. And then there's different like homeopathic preparations that he did. Two of the most well-known ones are the horn manure preparations. And so you take the horns of a cow, and in the fall, you would take the manure from a cow, put them in the horns, and then bury them in the ground for the whole kind of fall, winter, early spring season, and dig them up. And then in the spring, you have this really rich, beautiful humus material. And you can take that, and then you would take that and then put it in a bucket. Or there's different ways of stirring it, but one of the easiest kind of practical first-time ways of doing that is you can just take a 5-gallon bucket, fill it about halfway, put a handful of this material in, and then you would stir it for an hour just using your hands and going one direction, making a vortex, and then taking that and disturbing it, creating chaos. And then stirring it in the other direction and doing that back and forth and back and forth for an hour. And it can be a really kind of like beautiful meditative thing. And you really begin to, as you go through this process and the water really begins to get organized and it actually becomes easier and the vortexes form easier and it creates this beautiful substance and you kind of have this meditative process that you do. And then you take that and you spray it over the soil, like in the springtime or the winter when the soil is exposed and it's wet. Obviously, we never have exposed soil, but it's not like you don't have a ton of vegetative matter growing for it. You know, you can have it mulched or cover cropped or something like that. And so you're kind of spraying this compost tea over the land that you've spent an hour meditating about your land and your plants. And I think for me and for us on this farm, it's not only a process to increase fertility, like scientifically, but also, you know, mentally and kind of like for us, those sorts of things are also like important. We believe they have an influence on what we're doing in the land and everything too. And then its counterpart. Oh, you want to, do you have a question? Or
continue. I love it. I love it. What one thing? I just comment is this spiritual labor of love, a ceremonial ritual approach to aligning this Earth Church. This alignment of the energies, and we are of nature, and kind of getting into that flow and this meditative vortex with the cowhorn manure. I find it beautiful in the reverence piece. It seems laborious at first and meticulous maybe, but then similar to other forms of ceremony, in some ways, the intention is really, really special, really important, and it kind of puts the human in alignment with these cycles of the seasons and manifesting and putting those like prayers up. As I imagine, as you're stirring in that bucket, there's some like envisioning and visualizing and an imagination component to the season to come. And I'd love to hear about the counterpart, which is probably close because we're coming up to the summer solstice, right?
Yeah, that's a really beautiful reflection of that. I think that's totally exactly what it is. And it's not like, you know, you can do it one time a year or twice a year. It's not like it's going to take up a bunch of your time, but I think it's a really kind of important meditative part and spiritual part of the process of our way of growing and cultivation and stuff. And then, yeah, so the counterpart would be in the, we take quartz crystal and, actually pound it in this like metal vessel and then take it on. We've never actually done this one on our own. This year was just for a caveat. This past year was the first year that we kind of did all the preps or a number of the preps on our own, on our property. Most of our time working and making the preparations have been with the group, the BDANC, the Biodynamic Association of Northern California. And as a group, they meet quarterly and make preparations together because it's a lot easier to make them in a group and then you can buy them from the group. And it's a really great way to get an introduction to biodynamics, to meet other people who are practicing biodynamics. And it's one of the influential reasons that I wanted to stay in Northern California. And the person who I learned from, that I apprenticed at in Sacramento, was one of the main people who started the group and was really knowledgeable about the preparations. He's the one who kind of holds them and sells them. And so it's not like you have to make these things that I'm describing in order to do it. You can access them in different ways. There's also the Josephine Porter Institute you can buy preps from. So there's different places you can buy these things that I'm talking about, but I still explain like the process and how it's made. So with the quartz crystal, you would break it up into small pieces and then take it and then it gets into a super, super fine powder by actually taking two pieces of glass and then rubbing the crystal between these two pieces of glass in circular motions, and it creates a super fine powder, and that gets buried in a cow horn over the summer. But we use this substance over the summer, and you would do the same process of stirring it. And when I described the cow manure one, that one you would stir and put on in the evening. The quartz crystal you would stir and put on in the very early morning. And you would want to make sure that you're doing it in like some kind of backpack sprayer with a really fine mist. And it's a very gentle kind of thing that you're spraying. Whereas the horn manure, you can just take like, we usually just take a 5-gallon bucket and like some pine branches and you do kind of like big droplets out. And the quartz crystal sort of is looked at a way of kind of creating and putting this fine, minuscule homeopathic amount of crystal on the plants. And you want to do it to them when you start to see the formation of what you're going to harvest on the plant. So say for like cabbages. You would, when you start to see sort of the leaves begin to turn inward, you would spray it on cabbages. When you start to see some the first green young tomatoes on a plant, you would start to spray it on tomatoes. And like for us, for cannabis, we begin to spray it on August 1st, kind of when you begin to see anthesis, the pistils forming and the beginning of the flowers. And so the idea of this is it kind of helps to magnify the cosmic forces of that are up in the sky as kind of like a magnifying glass. And so those are kind of like you have these like earthly cosmic dualities that are happening that are both really important for the plant, and that you're both kind of magnifying and helping by both of these processes. And then in biodynamics too, the cow is this really kind of important creature on the farm, and kind of has a resemblance and has these dualities too. Like it's a very meditative creature. It ruminates. It, you know, so once after they eat, they then will then sit and chew their cud. They basically then bring the food back up into their mouth and chew it for a long time, and then bring it back down. And it's Steiner kind of said that they also, that their horns had this connection to the cosmos, and even their sinuses go into their horns. And in biodynamics, it's really important to leave the horns on the cow. The horns that we do have for this process is after they're butchered, but a lot of the cows you may see around would naturally have horns and they get pulled, which is like a really sad thing that happens. And so in biodynamics, you absolutely have to keep horns on the cows because it's an important part of their body and their system. And then, you know, once they have this meditative process and that all happens, then you get this rich, beautiful material that we can use for compost and for this horn manure thing. And so, that's a little bit more about that.
I love the connection to the cosmos. I think that's a really fascinating piece here, too. It's aligning our garden planet with its celestial spacing and patterns and the cycles that, you know, these orbits and these constellations. And can we speak a little bit to these planetary bodies, which I know Steiner was articulate about, obviously with farming, the sun, and we're here on the Cannabis Connection and we love regenerative and sun-grown everything, produce, cannabis, everything. We're passionate about aligning with nature and kind of building that relationship with the seasons and that massive fireball in the sky and that we orbit, but also the moon, and some of these beautiful patterns that, living organisms, especially plants, like you said earlier, they're literally rooted. They're stationary and held on. But this planet, you know, where they are in the field or in nature, but we are on a massive orbit and cruising through the cosmos. And Steiner was pretty intuitive and had this really beautiful spiritual approach of you know, the science of spirituality. And I thought it was interesting to learn about the cows too. It's like their antennae. It's a piece of their, keeping their consciousness in alignment with the cosmos and like almost like a broadcast, kind of like what we're doing right now on the airwaves. We have these three massive towers. If this radio station was a cow, the three towers would be the horns and getting that signal out to the universe. But can you speak to the sun and the moon and the importance of certain things that happen on the farm, even for novice gardeners, you know, to think about these two celestial bodies?
Yeah, I thought that is like one of the best examples. That's an amazing analogy for trying to conceptualize like what a cow is doing and how we kind of see it. Because, you know, with radio towers, we're not seeing these waves moving through the air, but they are, and people are able to hear it from far away. And so I think that's like a really amazing analogy to try to understand that. And I definitely, I see the cow as this like very cosmic yet grounded creature, and definitely that those horns are like its antenna to the cosmos. And so, as far as the sun and the moon and their cycles, you know, the sun has this. We have the yearly cycle of the sun, which of it, like, you know, just plays into the seasons that we have and peak growing time, and plants like, you know, outdoor grown cannabis is very influenced at its flowering time and when that happens, and then you know, very, very light dependent, and many of all the other crops that we grow too are the same way, and dependent on those hours of light. Like, we understand that from like doing light depth. We do light depth, and when we're pulling, we pull tarp. So in the peak summertime now, when the hours of light are much greater, we're able to deprive the plants of light by doing 12 hours of daylight, 12 of dark, and triggering them to flower. And so that's very much based upon its solar relationship to the sun. And then getting a bit more finer detail, I would say, kind of, is, you know, then its relationship to plants' relationship to the moon. And that happens, you know, 12 times a year, the way that the moon cycle works. And you would just see, like, we start our seeds on the new moon. And then by the time they crack open, then, and they hit by the full moon, they're really like getting their way, you know, really starting to grow. And this woman, Maria Toon, she developed what you see. A lot of people have seen the planting calendars, and she kind of took Steiner's indications and other things that she experimented with and created the planting calendar. And I think that's something that people are quite familiar with, and that, but that wasn't necessarily something that Steiner had created. But the way that works is it is very much based upon the moon and where the moon is in relation to the zodiac. And the zodiac, all the constellations are divided into different signs, so water, earth, fire, and air, and then those are related to different parts or growth patterns of the plant. So, like, fire would be the fruits, air would be flowers, water would be leaves, and earth would be roots. So as the moon passes through, like, a certain zodiac sign, like if it passes through like a leaf sign, then it would be a time when you would work on, like, if you're growing lettuce, plant some lettuce seeds, cultivate your lettuce seeds, harvest your lettuce seeds. Or like for cannabis, you would be paying attention to when it passes through a fire sign, and all that is kind of like, it's not like you have to know which one those are. In the planting calendars, it'll say like a leaf day, a fruit day, a flower day. And so you can kind of do that. We don't really follow that. Sometimes we do for starting seeds. But other than that, I feel like for us, at least, life is too complicated. And there's so much going on that we don't have a chance to really to follow that at all. And in the biodynamic world, there are, like, as my teacher used to like to say, that the tunes and the untunes are the people who follow the calendar and don't follow the calendar. So it's not like you don't have to. And even as part of the biodynamic certification, Demeter certification, there's nothing in it that talks about the calendar. And so it's definitely not like, you don't have to be like, oh, I'm not following biodynamics because I'm not following the calendar. But I definitely think it's worth also just looking into and experimenting, and something I've definitely wanted to be more into. But it's sometimes you just you just got to do stuff and not kind of be feel like you're beholden to that schedule too.
Yeah, I completely understand, and it's challenging sometimes. There's so much work to be done. There's so much to take care of, and to be your mind share can only hold so much, especially with the family, and especially being part of this amazing regenerative community too. And in Kovalo, I can't tell you how many wonderful groups I've had on the show, and the history, and it's just a very beautiful, charmed part of the world. That valley is very, very special, and to align and to practice these wonderful approaches to agriculture, and also just to your life. It's a beautiful way of life. And can you speak a little bit to the what I love here is it's not just plants. It's a place for animals and to fully express and live into their true being. And we have in tending the garden, there's animals involved in that beautiful work of art Elizabeth drew. I believe they have the donkey as theirs. I'm not looking at the picture right this second, but can you speak to the role these animals play on the farm?
Yeah, in that amazing drawing that she did, so talented. She has the donkey for theirs, the goat for Bryslyn, and the cow for us.
Oh, that's so perfect, because we were talking about, I didn't even know, we were just talking about the cow.
Yeah.
Beautiful. And it's on top, yeah, with the cosmos on top.
Yeah, and I feel like she pulled that out and did that so beautifully. And you know, I think it's such a special thing to have animals on the farm, and such a huge responsibility. You know, there is no just leaving the farm when you have animals on the farm. And so it's definitely not something to take lightly when you take on. That being said, I always like to tell people that there's super simple ways to bring an animal element onto the farm, to not necessarily have what you think is quote unquote livestock. But you know, in many places we see things growing where we don't have things blooming, like, you know, maybe it's just grass or something like that. Where if we begin just in somebody's like home or small little garden, if you begin to plant flowers that bloom, and pollinator plants and perennial plants, or put in like a birdhouse, or, you know, there's these really cool like pollinator bee apartments you can make, and different things that you can just bring an animal element onto your land or to where you live by bringing in insects and bringing in birds. And those are all animals, and they're, you know, they're kind of like this animal element that you can bring around that need homes and need nurturing, especially in our cities and stuff. But then, you know, if we go further, like we have chickens, we have cows, and we have sheep currently on the farm, and they all have different, all their manures that we use, I feel like all have different qualities to them, and, you know, help to create, when you're using these different types of manures, help to create a more diverse fertility for the plants and on the land. And the animals just have like so much personality, and like we used to keep our chickens kind of cooped up in this place, and about a couple months ago we ended up just opening the door, and we let them kind of roam all around now, our house, not in our house, in our yard, and kind of around. And it's just so fun to have them and see what they do. And yeah, so I think having animals is a really special thing.
Yeah, let them free. Chicken scratch. It's fun. How wonderful. What a cool shift. Yeah, it's and one thing I would love to learn a bit, I was recently listening to another friend speak about the birth of civilization, and how the amount of calories put in the hunter-gatherer eras, when we were so nomadic as people, as humans, very long ago, centuries ago, thousands of years ago. It wasn't until we like really discovered the fertility of poop and like working with poop and growing in the birth of agriculture that we had this return on, you know, how many calories we spend to produce more calories for ourselves and for the tribe. And I would love to hear a little bit about compost and compost preparations. And this is something very special. We spoke a little bit about the horn manure and the silica, but I would love to hear about other compost preparations and any advice you have for people looking to do what they can with what they have on site. Because one key piece about what I've learned from watching you on Instagram and just being a part of this conversation around this amazing film that's going to be coming out, Tending the Garden, is the farm as a living organism, and as the farmers and the family and the community as a part of that living organism, and how it can take care of itself, could be a metaphor for community as well, with what's available in front, you know, around. That's this regenerative conversation, this process of regenerative lifestyle. And compost, I think, is a really important thing that some people are still, personally, I'm speaking about myself, I'm still novice at and trying to get better and implement simple things for even our garden, for all the gardeners.
Yeah, I mean, compost is such a magical, amazing thing. And I feel like we're, you know, I feel like we're still novices too. I mean, when we love experimenting with it, and it's always like, okay, how's this going to turn out?
Nice.
you know, I think you just got to do it and just keep doing it. You know, I feel so weird when I go to like visit my grandma or something, and like we're putting cooking vegetables or peeling something and throwing stuff in the garbage in this plastic bag, and I'm like, oh, it like pains me when I do it. It's like I want to bring a bucket with me and bring it all back home. You know, in saying that, like, it's really easy to compost. All you need is like basically what you would be producing in your house, as far as like when you're prepping food and that sort of thing, would be considered like green material. And then all you would need to help balance that is some brown material. So if you have like a tree that drops a lot of leaves in the fall, you could rake that and make a pile and keep that to layer your green material. Or probably just one bale of straw you could buy would last a really long time to help layer with the green material. And you're just kind of balancing that like more nitrogen kind of green stuff with something more brown that kind of tones it down, and you just kind of layer those two things.
The lasagna method.
Yeah, and just kind of, you just want to, just balance that. And it can just be done on the ground, like on a pot in a pile. You can get a little container for it. But it can be super simple and just something to avoid one more thing going to the landfill. There's other ways as far as like, and then, you know, once you can do that pile for like 6 months or something and then start a new one and let that one finish and then have that go on whatever. It can be in pots, on the ground, landscaping, anything. But another really great way, I feel like, even if people are like growing in smart pots or, you know, not doing companion planting.
Containers, yeah, sure.
In containers, you can do cover cropping in containers too. You know, it's really good to not have your soil exposed at any time of the year, and cover crop is an amazing fertility, and it helps to rotate the crops that you have in there, so you have something different. You have continued root growth in there, which feeds the microorganisms. And then that can just be dropped in a pot, in a container, and some straw put on top. And then you're just kind of leaving all that growth in there and feeding back to the microorganisms. You know, you can buy compost from the store. You can, if you know somebody, it depends on where you are, but somebody who has animals, a lot of times there's people who like have animals and don't know what to do with all the poop, and you can get that and make your own compost. And we have like a lot of different types of compost that we're making on the farm. As far as like what we're doing, we have worm bins. We do that. We also do larger windrows of compost where we're layering manure and straw and leaves and different things. We have where we kind of like have our animals stay during the winter, and we're feeding them hay. That's sort of their manure, and then kind of scraps of hay end up building up, and we're able to take that and get it out with a tractor and make windrows with that to make compost. I know that I think that like Green Sources takes that material and just puts it directly onto their beds in the spring, which is really awesome too.
Nice.
Yeah, and then this year we started this other new kind of compost that we're super excited about, where in one of our greenhouses we kind of built these long, I want to say they're like 6 by 30 feet, basically wood box, and just basically put in different like plant material, wood chips, manure, and built it up all the way to the top. It's about like 4 feet high or something like that. And
wow.
We did that in the very early spring. There we have a little video and some stuff about it on our Instagram. And then we were able to actually put a hog panel on top of it because it created it got up to the heat really quickly, and then we were able to put our starts on it and basically had a way to heat our starts in the really early in the winter. Really early spring for them without having to use heating mats and use electricity. And so we kind of did this awesome dual purpose kind of thing. And the hope is that by next year in the spring, we'll be able to take all that out, use it as potting soil, and then refill them for the following year.
And whoa, so closed loop. Very cool.
Yeah, it's a very exciting new compost project that we're doing on the farm.
I think I found the picture of it's hotbed numbers.
Yeah,
using all ingredients from the land, building potting soil, which is so righteous to have that. And then you're building soil, and you're putting all this biology and all this biomass and carbon and heaping and keeping it. And I see Daniel there with like it looks like he was scraps or something from just grasses and things. But I also see flats of maybe veggies or starts that went a little long or something, and you just kind of throw it all into this hotbed. It's really, it's cool. I like this idea a lot. Very neat.
Yeah, we got it for the idea from this really awesome semi-new book from Chelsea Green Publishing, one of our favorite publishers. Such amazing books they have on there for regenerative agriculture. And it's a wood chip book that kind of recently came out, and that was where we got the idea from. And I think it's done a lot more in Europe and stuff, and not so much in the States. I think the author of the book was from Europe too. But I do know that that Green Source does a version of that for their potting soil. I believe that they kind of just make a heap in their greenhouse. And I think that doing it in a greenhouse is really awesome too. It really helps in our climate, because if we talk about kind of the influence of the sun, it's often like a bit too cold. The compost, if you're doing it outside, the compost kind of really stops working at a certain point in the late fall and through the winter, and won't really start like working again and doing its thing till the spring. So by having it in the greenhouse kind of helps, just like it would help grow your vegetables earlier in the spring and longer in the fall or winter. The greenhouse kind of helps with maturing the compost as well.
Wow, that's nice to know. Yeah, the greenhouse in a way is kind of giving it that perfect sanctuary and that hot biology. I really love that. When you, it's so many dual purposes. It's not only a great place to deposit all this amazing life and biology and carbon, but it's also when it is cold. And one key thing is, you know, timing and trying to get starts going at the right time and staying on a nice schedule to have a source of warmth. I imagine there's some ambient, putting things right on top of it is plenty for those initial tap roots to really take hold and for those starts to sprout and get blasting off. But yeah, I love this. It's neat to see this. It's pretty big. I'm pretty impressed with you guys. It's a big hot bed. And I do appreciate Nick's and Elizabeth's, yeah, green source. They definitely do the big piles in the greenhouse. And when it comes time to start germinating and planting seeds, they just bring little pots to the pile and just start scooping them on, getting it going right there. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. What they do is really amazing. I forgot. I think also you wanted me to touch on. I really briefly could just touch on the compost preps too.
Yes, please. Yes, I love it.
I know we only have like a few minutes left, but that was something else that Steiner gave indications for was the compost preparations, which kind of took it's different combinations that took kind of like an animal part in conjunction with a plant part to kind of create these vitalized. Preparations that you would then add to the compost to help the compost with its process. And so one example would be you take yarrow flowers and you put them in a stag bladder of a deer, and that gets buried in the ground too. And then another one is dandelion in the mesentery of a cow. And then chamomile in the intestines of a cow. And so, like, you know, that chamomile is very good for our digestion or when you have an upset stomach. So it's going into the intestines, which has a relationship to that as well. And so all these kind of also have their relationship to different elements like phosphorus and different things that then they help kind of bring, Steiner said, kind of like bring an intelligence to the compost when they're then added. And all these things we're kind of talking about when we talk about the influence of the cosmos and these different things, the way that compost preparations work too is also kind of bringing these kind of like microdosing kind of intelligence to the compost pile to help it along its way for its digestion. And you can like, a great book that I find is a really great introduction to biodynamics is Culture and Horticulture by, oh my gosh, I can't remember his name. It's like Wolf Stoltz or something like that. But anyways, there's a new version that recently came out, and it's a really great way to kind of read about the basic ideas behind biodynamic agriculture. The main book for biodynamic agriculture, which has the lectures that Steiner gave, is called Agriculture, the Agriculture Courses, and that's a bit more complicated because the people that he was giving the lectures to already had kind of a deep understanding of anthroposophy and this kind of spiritual science that Steiner had developed. And so it can be challenging for people who don't kind of already have a basis of understanding of Steiner's work, but I find that other book is a better kind of first introduction.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. And one thing that is important that when he gave those lectures, he was speaking to a friendly audience that had been participating and contributing and inspiring ongoing lectures and conversations. And so it is helpful to orient yourself and build your knowledge. And then eventually when you feel really acquainted, you can dive deep because it's deep. Yeah. It's deep. It's amazing.
Exactly. It is. It can go pretty deep. Yeah.
No, I'm so excited to chat, and I think this is a very exciting opportunity. We're in our last couple minutes, and I wanted to give you the last words, and I wanted to say thank you and congratulations, and keep us in mind whenever you need to get the word out, and maybe we can speak a little bit to the film Tending the Garden, and just any thoughts you have or any calls to action or anything we can do to support your farm, your family, your community, and this amazing work of art, the film Tending the Garden.
Yeah, oh my gosh, it was such an honor, you know, when Claire and Jesse asked us if we wanted to do this and kind of didn't really know where we were going or how it was going to all turn out. And just, you know, they came and would stay with us for like a weekend, like 5 or 6 times throughout the year, and just kind of filmed us what we were doing day to day, kind of just had to follow us around as we did stuff. And they're just two such amazing people, and it was so awesome to just get to know them better as they were staying here. And, you know, they just had these little cameras and got this amazing, beautiful footage. They're both so talented. And, you know, they'd like go out in the mornings to record bird sounds and had different lenses to get like micro shots and macro shots and a drone, and just, you know, the two other farms that they chose are just such amazing, beautiful farms with beautiful human beings on them, and listening to their perspectives and their practices on their land is so awesome. And I think, you know, the Steiner talks too about the individuality of the farm, and I think that the filmmakers really showed that and brought that out too. Even though we're all diversified, we're all growing cannabis, we all have doing these regenerative practices, there is such a distinct individuality and beautiful thing that each of these farms have created on their land. And the film is not done with its final editing yet, but there's a trailer you can watch, and there'll be like short versions that are being shown, and they are doing fundraising, so we can try to get these out to different film festivals. And so if you can, there's like hoodies, t-shirts you
support,
can get.
Support. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I'm very excited, and thank you for listening to The Cannabis Connection. I'm your host, Christopher.